Gentlemen, we have called you together to inform you that we are going to overthrow the United States government.
Dr. David Martin was recently a guest at the European Union and laid out the timeline for the biggest democide in recorded history. You can see the full video on band.video. This is my short edit.
Coronavirus was identified in 1965 as one of the first infectious replicatable viral models that could be used to modify a series of other experiences of the human condition. What's particularly interesting about its isolation in 1965 was that it was immediately identified as a pathogen that could be used and modified for a whole host of reasons. In 1966, the very first COV coronavirus model was used as a transatlantic biological experiment in human manipulation. And in 1967, we did the first human trials on inoculating people with modified coronavirus. The common cold was turned into a chimera in the 1970s. And in 1975, 1976, and 1977, we started figuring out how to modify coronavirus by putting it into different animals, pigs, and dogs, and that became the basis for Pfizer's first spike protein vaccine patent filed, are you ready for this, in 1990. And in 1990, they found out that there was a problem with vaccines. They didn't work. It turns out that coronavirus is a very malleable model. It transforms and it changes and it mutates over time. As a matter of fact, every publication on vaccines for coronavirus from 1990 until 2018, every single publication concluded that coronavirus escapes the vaccine impulse. In 2002, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill patented, and I quote, an infectious replication defective clone of coronavirus. And that work, patented at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, mysteriously preceded SARS 1.0 by a year. In 2005, this particular pathogen was specifically labeled as a bioterrorism and bioweapon platform technology. And from 2005 onwards, it was actually a biowarfare enabling agent, its official classification. We have been lured into believing that EcoHealth Alliance and DARPA and all of these organizations are what we should be pointing to, but we've been specifically requested to ignore the facts that over $10 billion have been funneled through black operations through the check of Anthony Fauci and a side-by-side ledger where NIAID has a balance sheet and next to it is a biodefense balance sheet equivalent dollar-for-dollar matching that no one in the media talks about. Poised for human emergence in 2016 at the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, such that by the time we get to 2017 and 2018, the following phrase entered into common parlance among the community. There is going to be an accidental or intentional release of a respiratory pathogen. 7 months before the allegation of patient number one, 4 patent applications of Moderna were modified to include the term accidental or intentional release of a respiratory pathogen as the justification for making a vaccine for a thing that did not exist. The intent was to get the world to accept a universal vaccine template, and the intent was to use coronavirus to get there. This was premeditated domestic terrorism stated at the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in 2015. Does that sound like a bat and a pangolin went into a bar in the Wuhan market? This is an act of biological and chemical warfare perpetrated on the human race.
See the full video at band.video. On this Memorial Day weekend, let us remember our friends and family that we've lost in this war against we the people being waged by our own government. And let us never rest until there is justice. Alex Jones revealed over 20 years ago how world elites reenact human sacrifice every year at Bohemian Grove.
Midsummer sets us free.
Yeah. And there have been several whistleblowers reporting that satanic ritual sacrifice is at the highest levels of our society. Ritualized murder is, after all, the ultimate expression of tyranny. And as disturbing as it is to most people, it has commonly been used as a form of blackmail. Former child actor Rick Schroeder recently released a video of a childhood experience he had in Hollywood where he believes he met members of this cult.
Let me explain. When I was young, I couldn't drive yet. I was hanging out with the older guys. And on Point Doom, and somebody popped in a cassette tape into a VHS player. And there was a room with a body, I believe it was a male, laying on a table. And people came around the room. It was dimly lit, but they had hoods and robes on. And they had some sort of ritual where they took out a knife and they cut him down the side. It was his right side. And they took out parts of him and the blood started flowing. And they were chanting. And there was women there, and they took off their clothes. And then they took the blood and they smeared it on their bodies and started to be sexual with each other. It was quite disturbing to see. And so they gave me the cassette, and I took the cassette to somebody I trusted. And we watched it. And they said, never watch that again and give it back to whoever gave it to you. So I did that. But I was always confused about why they didn't ask where it came from. And so I believe that I met some of the cult members when I was younger. If in fact we have no accountability or justice, it could be because these people that are supposed to bring us justice and protect and defend the Constitution are corrupted by this cult. I have no fear of them. You know, I only fear Jesus. And so perhaps whoever's investigating these folks needs to go a layer below the top and come up from the mid-level, who are not cult members or been blackmailed by the cult, possibly. Because that's the only explanation I have for why we haven't had accountability and justice for what they've done to America and continue to do to America while we all just watch. So I share this with the hope that those mid-level people that are investigating in the FBI and the CIA will understand that their superiors, perhaps, will never give us justice because of the level of blackmail involved. All right, that's off my chest. That feels better. Now you all know. God bless America, and God bless those trying to defeat this cult. In Jesus' name, I give you this message. Amen.
I hate this horrible new world.
What I need now is the comfort of fast food and slow friends.
And here is the documented fate of that gallant 56. Carter Braxton of Virginia, wealthy planter, trader, saw his ships swept from the seas. To pay his debts, he lost his home and all of his properties and died in rags. Thomas Lynch Jr., who signed that pledge, was a third-generation rice grower, aristocrat, large plantation owner. After he signed, his health failed. His wife and he set out for France to regain his failing health. Their ship never got to France, was never heard from again. Thomas McKean of Delaware was so harassed by the enemy that he was forced to move his family five times in 5 months. He served in Congress without pay, his family in poverty and in hiding. Vandals looted the properties of Ellery and Clymer and Hall and Gwinnett and Walton and Hayward and Rutledge and Middleton. Thomas Nelson, Jr. of Virginia, raised $2 million on his own signature to provision our allies, the French fleet. After the war, he personally paid back the loans, wiped out his entire estate, and he was never reimbursed by his government. In the final battle for Yorktown, he, Nelson, urged General Washington to fire on his, Nelson's, own home, which was occupied by Cornwallis. It was destroyed. Thomas Nelson, Jr. had pledged his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor. The Hessians seized the home of Francis Hopkinson of New Jersey. Francis Lewis had his home and everything destroyed, his wife imprisoned. She died within a few months. Richard Stockton, who signed that declaration, was captured, mistreated, his health broken to the extent that he died at 51. His estate was pillaged. Thomas Hayward, Jr. was captured when Charleston fell. John Hart was driven from his wife's bedside while she was dying. Their 13 children fled in all directions for their lives. His fields and grist mill were laid waste. For more than a year, he lived in forests and caves and returned home after the war to find his wife dead, his children gone, his properties gone, and he died a few weeks later of exhaustion and a broken heart. Lewis Morris saw his land destroyed, his family scattered. Philip Livingston died within a few months from the hardships of the war. John Hancock, history remembers best due to a quirk of fate rather than anything he stood for, that great sweeping signature attesting to his vanity, towers over the others. One of the wealthiest men in New England. And yet he stood outside Boston one terrible night of the war. And he said, "Burn Boston, though it makes John Hancock a beggar, if the public good requires it." So he too lived up to the pledge. Of the 56, few were long to survive. 5 were captured by the British and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes from Rhode Island to Charleston sacked, looted, occupied by the enemy, or burned. 2 lost their sons in the army. 1 had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 died in the war from its hardships or from its more merciful bullets. I don't know what impression you had of the men who met that summer in Philadelphia. But I think it's important that we remember this about them. They were not poor men. They were not wild-eyed pirates. These were men of means. They were rich men, most of them, and had enjoyed much ease and luxury in their personal living. Not hungry men, certainly not terrorists, not irresponsible malcontents, not fanatical incendiaries. These men were prosperous men, wealthy landowners. They were substantially secure in their prosperity. They had everything to lose. But they considered liberty, and this is as much as I shall say of it, they had learned that liberty is so much more important than security, that they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And they fulfilled their pledge. They paid the price. And freedom was born.
Gentlemen, we have called you together to inform you that we are going to overthrow the United States government.
Yeehaw!
Bush, he was a Nazi, that was why he went to war. Obama, he is just like him, a Bilderberg for sure. All their money and their wealth were stolen from a dead man's grave. A bunch of Nazi pigs they are, just study and be brave. Hitler, he was just a puppet for the New World Order. His ideas were never really his. Bush and Obama, it's the same side of the story. Will we ever learn our lessons? Will we ever free ourselves? United Nations wants to kill you, it's in the documents.
History repeats itself, the evil never ends. Now let's all just march into a FEMA camp today. Please let me just load a pistol and blow my brains away. After all, that's what we are doing almost every day. When we use bisphenol A, that's making people gay. Mercury and aspartame, I know the name sounds lame, but after all that's said and done, it's making me insane!
Gentlemen, we have called you together to inform you that we are going to overthrow the United States government.
You still think that jet fuel brought down the World Trade Center? Does anybody else see a problem here? If the government has nothing to hide, why are they so afraid to answer a few questions? This story does not add up.
I got locked away for 1 year for speaking about COVID-19 as war crimes. UN's royal elite don't like it. Just Google J6 and see what is going on in USA. It's crazy with all the political prisoners who, like me, did not break the law. The judge said it himself, before March 2020, you are right, it was not illegal, but now, as you say, we are under military law and we view it another way now, and you speaking about war crimes and international law on this matter, COVID-19, is now seen as extremist and radicalizing. End quote. Conclusion, 1 year in secure lockup as a national security threat for mentioning the Nuremberg Code. Look up Nuremberg Code, Treaty of Amsterdam and Maastricht Treaty and see what the system do not want you to know about history.